out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 17th of October 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I am actually broadcasting live today because normally we would have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, but he's still away in Never Never Land. Sleepyhead is still fast asleep. I'm hoping he might arrive at some point during the podcast. He did have every intention of being here today. We did have plans to talk about something to do with spying in Russia, but he must have really needed some sleep because he's been gone for about 16 hours. He was intending on being up at 6 o'clock this morning, American time, to send these notes over, and he just hasn't woken up. So hopefully we will hear from him before the end of the podcast. I haven't got much prepared because of that. Normally, Matt provides the content for the Thursday podcast, as I'm sure you're well aware. But we do have quite a lot that's going on right at this moment, actually, in the news, particularly with Brexit, which I normally cover in Aryan Britannia on Mondays. But there really hasn't been a lot of news on that front over the last couple of weeks. But it's just been announced now that Boris Johnson thinks that he has managed to get a deal that the EU is going to go along with. Nigel Farage has totally trashed this deal and said that it is just another treaty with the European Union, and I'm inclined to side with Mr. Farage on this. I don't think it's actually going to get past Parliament, even though he says that he has got a deal there. The DUP, they're going to vote against it. They've said that it's not good enough. The Labour Party will vote against it simply because it's Boris Johnson that came up with this deal. And this is all going to happen on Saturday. So I think they're trying to hedge their bets because Juncker has said, well, if you don't accept this deal, the European Union is not going to accept another extension. And of course, this is the plan that all the Ramoners had. They forced through this Act of Parliament saying that if Boris Johnson didn't get a deal, he had to go begging to the EU for an extension if he didn't have a deal by the 19th of October. Now, he does have a deal, but I guess if Parliament won't accept it, then he's actually carried out his part of the bargain, hasn't he? Because he's actually come up with a deal. If Parliament rejects that deal, then I guess he could still say, well, we're going to have a no-deal Brexit then. I did actually come up with a deal, so I have fulfilled my part of the bargain, so I don't actually have to go cap in hand to the EU. So that could be the plan. That could be what he's got planned. I must admit, there's probably only a very small chance of that, because I don't think Boris Johnson really wants to have a no-deal Brexit. He really wants to get some kind of deal going so that he pleases his financial backers, basically. So we'll have to see what happens on the Saturday. It's going to be an exciting Saturday. It's going to be an exciting day in Parliament, basically, with him trying to get this past them. And it basically seems the same as Theresa May's deal, except they've removed this backstop idea, which is what everybody was upset about. And instead, they're going to have customs checks outside of Northern Ireland. I guess they're going to be customs checks on the mainland in Britain. But Northern Ireland is still going to be seen as a part of Britain, which is obviously not good enough for them. So a lot of excitement about that. That's in the news at the moment. We've also got this running over of this young lad by this American woman, Anne Sokolas, who ran over this young lad, Harry Dunn. She was driving on the wrong side of the road, and she had diplomatic immunity, and she went back over to America. Now, I'm bringing this up because I really have suspicions that we're not being told what's really going on here, and obviously I think the mainstream media is incredibly biased against Donald Trump and having a go at Trump. Now, the parents of this young lad that were run over, they said they wanted to go to America because they wanted to meet with this woman that had run their son over. And they said this a couple of weeks back or whatever, and they got on the plane, they went to America. When they got to America, Donald Trump phoned them up and said, well, I'd like to meet you. I'd like to see if we can put this right. And they went there to visit him in the White House. And he said, well, this Anne Sokolas woman, she is actually here if you want to speak to her. They then said, well, we don't want to speak to her. It's far too soon. And the mainstream media put it as how callous of Trump to do this, to spring this on this poor woman, that this Anne Sokolas was in the building. But that is what this couple had asked for. That's why they said they wanted to go to America. Now, this couple have got a lawyer, and he seems to me to be very hateful towards Trump. I've seen him interviewed quite a few times, and he's always trying to lay the knife into Trump. And I think he's probably the reason why things haven't gone their way, basically. I think they should have gone and spoken to this Anne Sokolas woman, because I don't think it's her that is saying, I'm going to stay in America and not go back to Britain. I think this is to do with the intelligence services. The reason for that is because when Trump gave his press conference and he had the bit of paper that was spied upon by the TV cameras that said this Anne Sokolas will not be sent back to Britain, it was an intelligence briefing that said that. It wasn't some order from Donald Trump. It wasn't an order from her. It wasn't her saying this. It was the intelligence services that were saying this. And I think Trump saw that and thought, well, this is really not on. We've got to try and do all we can for this poor family, or this poor couple that have lost their son. I'd like to put this right. So he did the right thing, and he said in the press conference, this was a terrible accident. It was manslaughter. Accidents do happen. America does drive on the other side of the road to Britain, so this sort of thing does happen. And again, Donald Trump was lambasted in the media for saying this, and he was mocked and ridiculed. In actual fact, he was doing, you know, he was doing a really decent thing there, and he did another decent thing by arranging this meeting. And then when they were having this meeting, and Trump was trying to get this couple to go and see this Anne Sokolas, they were saying, well, we want it to be on British soil. We want her to be interviewed and go through court and all of these things, and we'll ask the court to just give her a suspended sentence so she doesn't have to do prison time, but we want it all to be done through the courts and what have you. And the intelligence services again said there is no way that she is going back to Britain. So this isn't this woman, Anne Sokolas, refusing to go back to Britain. This is the intelligence services in America that are saying, you're not having this woman. Now, that could be for a number of reasons, but one reason, it could be that she's the actual spy. They don't want her going back to Britain because she's got information that is obviously sensitive information. This woman is obviously of some kind of value to the American intelligence services. And it could be that if this couple had actually gone in there into the room where this Anne Sokolas is, she may have given an explanation to them as to why she couldn't come back to Britain. And you know, maybe that was it. She wanted to just speak to this couple on their own without anybody else there, and she might have been able to give them a bit of information that is not publicly available, which explains why she hasn't come back to Britain to be questioned. And it may all be above board. But because of this lawyer that keeps getting in the way, that really doesn't like Trump and is obviously trying to spin this out and make as much as he can, like all these lawyers do, I think he's the reason why they still haven't had any closure. And I think they really missed a chance there to actually sort this problem out. Apparently, Donald Trump was very kind. The woman herself said that she was holding Trump's hand. He wasn't holding her hand. She was holding Trump's hand, which shows you how approachable he is. And they're obviously amenable to Donald Trump, and it's this lawyer that isn't, that seems to be getting in the way. But that's all in the news at the moment over here in Britain. And I know that over there in America, there's been some coverage of this as well. But the other side of it is that she's saying, well, we need to have justice for this. We need to have justice. But, you know, traditionally, if somebody had committed manslaughter and they could get back to their own territory, they were safer. What the punishment was that they were exiled. They couldn't go back to the territory in which this manslaughter had occurred, because if they did, the family of the person that was killed, they had the right to kill the person that had killed the member of their family. It's called a blood feud. In the Old Testament, it says his blood will be upon his head. And what that means is that he can be lawfully killed. So if she was to come back to Britain under the old laws that we used to have, and the family of Harry Dunn were to see her, they could lawfully kill her. And she's not going to come back to Britain, is she? She's been exiled, basically. They have had justice. This woman has been exiled. I don't know how long it was that she was in Britain for. Oh, it looks like Sleepyhead might be here. Let's see. Hello, Matt. Are you there?
Yes, yeah, sorry about that. Technical difficulties. I'm sorry, my friend.
No worries, no worries. I was just getting to the end of what I was talking about. I was just talking about Anne Sokolas, this woman that went over, or she had diplomatic immunity, and she went back to America, who ran over this lad, Harry Dunn. And I was talking a little bit about Brexit. Now, I know you weren't actually able to send any notes over to me, so I'm unsure if we're going to be talking about the Kurds or about these Russian spies. Take your pick, Matt.
Well, the Kurds are, you know, on everybody's mind, which means they're probably, you know, not as important as other things. But I'm still of the view that the Kurds and the the Turks and the Russians are still on the same side here, despite Bashar al-Assad's words against the Turks in this respect.
Yeah, it is hard to work out quite what is happening over there. I mean, a lot of people seem to be sympathetic to the Kurds, and they're saying, oh, well, the Kurds helped out America and they fought against ISIS. But, well, so what? I mean, they were hired to do that. They were paid a lot of good money to do that. They were given a lot of weapons to do that. Nowhere in the contract did it stipulate, well, we'll also allow the Kurds to hijack a bit of Syria for themselves and start a new country called Kurdistan on the northern border of Turkey. And nowhere was that ever written down or a part of the contract. And that's actually what they've done. I think these Kurds are really out of order doing that. You know, they've done the job that they were asked to do, and it's questionable whether they were actually responsible for getting rid of ISIS or whether in actual fact it was Russia. I mean, what gives them the right to just set up on the border of Turkey and say, well, we're going to have our country here, Kurdistan? And apparently they've been taking shots at the Turkish police. Turkey has them listed as a terrorist organization. I think Trump has really done the right thing pulling out here. And it's forced these Kurds to go back to the legitimate leader of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, and come to an agreement with him, which is what they should have done in the first place. Not go to America and say, will you protect us while we set up a country here in the top of Syria? Because that's exactly what ISIS did. They said, well, we're going to set up our own country in the middle of Syria. You know, ISIS may be a little bit less civilized than the Kurds, but essentially it's the same thing, isn't it? It's stealing a piece of somebody else's country.
Look, if you were to ask the typical Turk today, they would put Kurds in the same category as Jews. They wouldn't hesitate there. This civil war has been going on for 40 years between the PKK and the Turks. The Turkish army has lost large numbers of men. Turkey doesn't give a damn what the U.S. says in this respect. And it's still true that without Turkey, much of American work in the Middle East is either impossible or very difficult. Turkish support was necessary for the invasion of Iraq, for example. Without that, Saddam Hussein wouldn't have split his army in half. He had to put half his army on the border of Turkey just in case something happened up there. So the U.S. only had to handle maybe at most half of Saddam Hussein's forces. Turkey is absolutely essential. It's the second largest military in all of NATO. To get them angrier now, given that they've already gone to China and Russia for all these weapon systems and money and everything else, Kurds don't give the U.S. anything. They're not part of any foreign policy objective except maybe the minor role they played in Iraq. Turkey is infinitely more significant. I strongly doubt, given everything that we've been talking about on this show for the last year, that they're going to give Russia the finger and move in. They're saying we're going to end this Kurdistan civil war once and for all. And the U.S. isn't really getting much from those people. So Trump is doing the right thing. And I wonder if any other president would have done the same. Given the Kurdistan, it really isn't much of it. They don't even have a big lobby in D.C. They're almost a Zionist extension, and they're no more than that. So that's really the issue here. And Turkey is doing the right thing. This war has been going on for a very long time, and they're saying we're going to put an end to it. So to some extent, Syrians are happy about it. Iraqis are happy about it. Pretty much everyone's happy about it except Kurds, but no one cares about them.
It seems to be just another way that they can attack Donald Trump. It's the Democrats are attacking Donald Trump. The mainstream media are attacking Donald Trump over this. But it does seem like he's done the right thing. Erdogan does seem to think that he has the upper hand. President Trump sent him a letter the other day. I forget the exact wording on it, but it was sort of saying, don't do anything silly. We're going to hit you with sanctions and I'll call you later. Or whatever. And it's been reported by the BBC that Erdogan just screwed that up and threw that in the bin. And I've also heard him say, as far as the sanctions are concerned, well, so what? We can always buy our weapons systems elsewhere, which is what they've done anyway. I mean, have they actually bought those air defense systems from Russia, and have they integrated them into their own systems, Matt? Or is that something they were planning on doing?
Well, I think they've been bought. My question is, have they been delivered? And the integration is a separate issue. The integration is going to take a long time because Turkey's been a member of NATO since 1952. It's going to be a long time before they can integrate these. By integration, we're talking about having uniform training and spare parts go from one. That NATO is based on that. You have to have fully integrated weapon systems, so someone from Norway can fight with someone from Italy. In the same fight against someone and be using the same equipment and the same spare parts and the same training. So that's going to take decades, maybe a decade at the least. Delivery, the purchase has been done. That's long. That's old news. Delivery, I'm not 100% sure about.
Yeah, I see. I thought the problem was that once they set it up, it was going to have access to all of NATO's systems. Because it's like countrywide, it's connected up to all the defense systems, and the defense systems are connected up with NATO. So once that Russian defense system is in there, it's going to have access to all this NATO information. That was the problem that I thought there was with it. Am I correct in thinking that?
Absolutely. China and Russia know all of NATO's secrets now, because. Now that Turkey has gone to them and the weapons, there's no question about it. The computers at least have begun to integrate themselves. The minute Turkey defected, at the very least, China knows the basic. Maybe I don't know if they know the codes or anything, but they know the basic structure of everything. It's a huge loss. It's been muted in the press for this reason because it is a crisis. We've been talking about this before, but. They know NATO secrets and this is a gigantic and it's one of the reasons that we NATO's not going to attack Russia. There's a good chance of that because of this reason. They know way too much now.
Well, another interesting side to this is obviously Putin, and Erdogan pivoted towards Putin a while back when Putin gave him the advance warning of that coup that was going to take place. And Putin is on the side of Syria. Putin's on the side of Bashar al-Assad, who is now supposedly defending the Kurds from the Turks. So again, Putin is going to come up smelling of roses in this, because I think he's going to broker some kind of ceasefire between the two of them. And I think Turkey will probably end up saying, well, look, we need to have a safe zone there, which is Turkey's aim anyway. They just wanted to have a safe zone there, get rid of the PKK terrorists that are in that area and replace them with Syrian refugees, which is obviously what Bashar al-Assad is going to want. He's going to want his Syrian people back. The Kurds are not going to want to be bombed. They're going to have to give up on their plans of a greater Kurdistan. And I think Putin is going to be the one that's going to broker this peace. Obviously, Erdogan, you know, he really doesn't think much of Donald Trump's attempt. He's just thrown the letter in the bin. So I think we're going to see Turkey and Russia even closer together because of this. And don't forget, I mean, I really don't like Erdogan. But at the same time, you know, you can see that all that he is doing is protecting his country from terrorists who kill Turks and kill the Turkish policemen. And if you look at the comments that are from Turks, they're saying that there's been loads of attacks on these Turks from these Kurds that are just in this area. So all he's really wanting to do is get a safe zone there and fill it up with these refugees, you know, which is good for Europe as well, because otherwise they're just going to head into Europe, which is the other thing he's threatened as well. He has said, look, if the EU doesn't stop calling this an invasion, I'll send these 3 million refugees into Europe. We don't want that. We want those 3 million refugees back into Syria. Trump's made a good move here, you know, by pulling out and allowing, you know, Turkey and Syria to sort this out between themselves. I think we're going to see a positive outcome from this, don't you?
Can you imagine the EU saying, no, we're opposed to this. This is an invasion. No, send those migrants here. That's our big goal here. That's our big foreign policy goal. You know, we're against this invasion because we want those people here to lower wages. So the thing is, Putin is going to look great. I think Turkey's going to look great. Every Turk in the world is aware that the Kurdistan issue is one of the number one issues in the country and has been for generations. The attacks aren't going to stop until that zone is established and they're wiped out, and maybe even beyond the zone. Bashar al-Assad, they've been fighting Kurdistan as much as Turkey has. Now, he's got to say, you can't take the Syrian territory. We could handle that as well as you can. But other than that, he doesn't have a position. And of course, he's probably still operating under the illusion, you know, Turkey's NATO. We don't want them here. So he's chosen a position, but it's an ambiguous position. I'm not sure what he's going to do here. If he wipes out the Turk, if Turkey wipes out the Kurds, Bashar is not going to have a whole lot of negative things to say, except, okay, get out now. And of course, the refugees at one point, you know, could be reintegrated into Syria if that's in fact where they're from. Reintegrating them into this country, and if Putin is the one who is negotiating this, then you're absolutely right. He's going to be the victor here, and the U.S. is not only going to look at the bad guy, but he's going to be completely irrelevant to the whole process.
Well, this area that the Kurds are in, it's not their own area. I mean, that area, it did have Syrians in it. Although these Kurds are Syrian citizens, it actually had Syrian people there that weren't Kurds that had to flee the area. And these Kurds have taken it over. Another side to this as well is that they're calling themselves the Syrian Democratic Forces. And I think, I mean, I may be wrong here, I think that was what the Free Syrian Army evolved into, which originally were opposed to Bashar al-Assad, because they were these American proxies. Is that right, Matt? Did the Free Syrian Army, did that evolve into the Syrian Democratic Forces, do you know?
Yeah, they had a lot of different names. That was certainly one of them. Remember, in the beginning of this, Turkey couldn't have been more against Bashar. Then Putin intervenes, and Turkey is neutral, if not pro-Assad. Now, by this, it's a ham-handed move. He looks like he's gone to the other side again. Remember, he was pro ISIS for a while. He was selling them oil. Remember when they had these huge tankers, inexplicable tankers, and this huge economy, you know, currency and everything else. Turkey was one of the sponsors of it. Now, I'm not willing to say he's gone all the way back again, but it's Once the Kurds are gone, now what are Turks going to do? Oh, this is part of Turkey now? Or can Syrians resettle it? That's going to be the question, and that's where Putin's going to come in and being able to handle this. I understand Bashar's position. I get it. But if Turkey wipes out the Kurds, it's going to benefit everybody. It's what happens after that matters here.
Just seems to make sense all around when you think about it, of just having that area there, the safe zone, putting the Kurds there. And that's something that people forget, is that ISIS were basically, they were facilitated by Turkey to make their way into Syria. All these ISIS fighters, what they were doing is they were flying to Ankara, and then they were traveling through Turkey, and then they were getting a free pass through this porous border into Syria, where they were joining up with all these various Islamic terror groups that made up the Islamic State. And then I guess once they sort of broke free from Turkey and America's orders, then America went against them and Russia went against them, obviously, and Turkey appears to have gone against them. But originally, Turkey was supporting the Islamic State. Now, what do you think happened there, Matt, to get Turkey to stop supporting ISIS?
Well, a few things. First of all, they're Arabs. Second of all, he may not have even realized they're American proxies at the time. One thing that's suspicious is that up until right to this present day, they have not attacked Turkish positions. Now, ISIS only attacks enemies of the U.S. Now, there could be a reason behind that, and that is that Turkey is the most fearsome group in the area. Saddam Hussein said back in the 80s that the one fat power he fears is Turkey. My father fought with the Turks in Korea. They're a fearsome group of people. They don't fear pain or death in the military. So ISIS may just not want to mess with them. And the Kurds are have been doing it for so long, I guess they're kind of used to it. But Erdogan, has that ISIS thing as a weapon to use. He may know more now. But I really doubt he would do anything like that again. But he did. I mean, we mentioned that already. He was almost a sponsor of the group. It was a weapon he could use. And once Putin intervened, though, that was over. So really, again, like you say, it's going to be up to Putin from here to keep this from going out of control and to broker this deal. And I don't, I just don't see Erdogan going back after everything that he's done with the Chinese and the Russians. To fighting them again and trying to make nice with Washington. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, Washington's already condemned him more than once. And don't forget, there's another point here too. The coup was a few years ago that wiped out a huge portion of the high command in the army. I think over half the top generals were retired. So don't forget that the Turkish army is still in disarray. They might not be as fearsome as they used to be. Now they could have recovered from that. But I think more than half of the officers were wiped out in that coup. So they're not what they used to be. There's still a certain chaos in the military over there.
Well, I guess if Bashar al-Assad says, I'll take responsibility for these Kurds. They've got a reason to back off and they can work with Assad to put those refugees there. And it does seem that it was Putin's intervention that stopped Erdogan supporting these ISIS groups, because they were holding slave markets in Turkey. I can remember about reading them selling slaves there and driving these oil tankers through, and Erdogan was right behind it and helping them because they were going after Syria, and then he just suddenly seemed to stop. And it must have been about the time when Putin took decisive action and allied himself with Bashar al-Assad. Well, we've reached the end of the podcast here, Matt. Just before we go, I'll just bring up another news story that we were talking about the other day about the sanctions that were being put on whiskey and cheese and all these produce from the European Union. And we were talking about that, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Again, that was major news today on RT. So once again, Radio Aryan and the Daily Nationalist is way ahead of the curve with the international news. Thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.